And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and our theme in the second hour is outside influences. Each of my guests is talking about the impact of outside influences on themselves or an institution. My first guest is an actress best known for her role as Erin Walton on the hit TV series The Waltons. We discuss the outside influences that shaped her life and how she resiliently overcame setbacks from her memoir, Lessons from the Mountain. My second guest is a creativity expert who specializes in spontaneous combustion. She helped us get our creative juices flowing by sparking our right brain thinking. We discussed her book, Smart Street Smart Advertising. My next guest exerted his influence on Congress for one of this country's largest conglomerates. We'll examine lobbying, lobbyists, and modern lawmaking from his book, Dodging the Bullet. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Ed Jaffe was a Washington representative and lobbyist for PPG Industries from 1973 to 1993, focusing mainly on environmental and energy issues. His work brought him in contact with a wide circle of senators and representatives and their staff members. In 1983-84, Ed faced off against one of the largest corporations in the world, Texaco. He used his organizational skills to form and lead a coalition of four companies, later joined by six others, to an extended battle with a giant of the oil industry, Texaco, over the future of several corporate facilities, including PPG Industries' largest one, was at stake. Industrial editor for IBM and head of the environmental quality information for a major trade organization before joining PPG. He's a journalism graduate from George Washington University, and he's worked for the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and United Press. He's the parent of three and the grandfather of five. He and his wife live in Springfield, Virginia. Welcome to the show, Ed. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. And you, I have to say, are the first lobbyist that I've ever had on the show. And I want to just start off talking about lobbying in general. Lobbyists probably rank just slightly above used car salesmen and IRS agents as one of the most reviled occupations in the mind of many American citizens. As a former lobbyist yourself, do they deserve such a bad rap?
Well, first of all, gee, I'm disappointed. I thought we were at the absolute bottom. I mean, really, we're starting to move up now.
Well, don't get too competitive for that position. That's a race to the bottom right there.
Yeah, the bad rap is partly deserved and largely not. Lobbying is as old as this nation. People have always had interests. They've always had folks to represent them with regard to those interests before elected officials. And that's true at the county level out there. It's true at the state level, and it's obviously true nationally. What a lobbyist does is to try to represent the entity's interests, and if the lobbyist is good, he or she will try to gather all the facts and make a straightforward presentation to, first of all, the staffer, because the staffer is a key, mm-hmm. and then to the member himself or herself, and let the chips fall. That bespeaks a key point, though, Billy, and that is everybody thinks that money is the key thing. For every Jack Abramoff out there in the field carrying in bags of bucks, there are probably 25 lobbyists who are out there doing it the right way. Abramoff was the drop of ink in a very large bottle of water. So you really need to be out there speaking to all the people you can, being factual, being straightforward, honest, and hoping that you can win, which you don't always win.
All right. Now, let me just ask one other question, and I want to come to your specifics, Ed. But sure. Haven't special interest groups, really, and the lobbyists that represent them, ripped representative democracy away from the citizens and sort of put it into the hands of large corporations who do have the money to buy the most influential people?
You're parroting my own wife, who constantly asks the same question. Let me tell you what I say to her. The fact is that the major corporations do have a disproportionate amount of clout. There isn't anybody who is going to argue that. So what can the small individual do? Or what can the actual individual do? Get involved, and I mean really involved. Let me give you an example. There's a guy I know very well here in Fairfax County, Virginia, who's got a retarded child who's now age, I think, 26.
Mm-hmm.
Ray and his wife got involved with the Association for Retarded Children, now just known as the ARC. About 20 years ago, they started slowly, but they got into the point of writing letters every week, making visits to their local officials every week. They were either being considered a total pest or they started to be taken fairly seriously, not quickly, but over time. They are now the best-known representatives for retarded children in the state by far, and members of the state legislature listen to them because they started by becoming actively involved in ARC and not just going to the meetings, but actually taking a leadership role. That ain't easy, but that's the only way that I can see that the average Joe or Jane can have anything like an equal shot.
All right. We're talking to Ed Jaffe, everybody, a former lobbyist and now author of the book Dodging the Bullet, an inside Washington look at high-stakes lobbying against an oil giant. So, Ed, that brings us to your story, which is a very compelling story. Tell us about your story. How'd you become a lobbyist? And tell us about the battle that you waged against Texaco.
Okay. I'll try to be brief on the former. I gravitated to lobbying after being an environmental writer. I convinced my company to let me do something they had never done before, to be an agent between them and the environmentalists. So the people I worked with were in Congress, but they were also people like Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, Friends of the Earth, and folks like that, trying to craft win-win answers to problems. Now, did we win all the time? No. Probably one out of every three, maybe every four. Why was that? Because one side or the other wasn't willing to bend far enough. But the psychic rewards were huge. And so that was what I was doing most of the time. I was not your typical high-powered guy. When this case came up, we found out that our largest plant would be in dire straits and 2,200 employees might lose their jobs on the Louisiana Gulf Coast if our opponent had succeeded. What happened was, let me take you back to 1967. The story takes place 16 years later, 1983. We had a long-term, low-cost contract to get an assured supply of natural gas at our Lake Charles, Louisiana plant, which we used in making some of our product mix. It was the amount that we used, though, that was absolutely staggering. It was 100 million cubic feet of gas a day.
Wow.
That would, I don't know this for a fact, my guess is that would be enough to heat Ventura and Santa Barbara on any day in the winter. You guys don't get all that chilly, but still, it was huge. And when we signed the contract back in 67, natural gas was dirt cheap, so much so that Texaco had been actually flaring it off. So we signed a 20-year deal with them, 67 to 87, at 18 cents a thousand cubic feet, with a 1 cent rise every 4 years, so that by 1983, we're paying them 22 cents. The problem for them was that now, if you fast forward from 67, 6 years later, and the Arab oil embargo that you may recall.
Very much so.
Okay, that shot up the price of fuel at the pump, but it also shot up the price of natural gas. So they took us to court in the state and tried to abrogate it. That failed. They then went to the state legislature and tried, and that failed. Now you fast forward to 83, and I get a phone call from our guy in charge of energy supply who says, "Hey, Ed, I understand there's a bill in President Reagan's natural gas decontrol bill. How about going to an energy meeting of the National Association of Manufacturers? Keep your ears open and see if there's anything in it that we don't like." Well, long story short, yeah, very late in the bill, I think it's about a 488-page bill, on about page 414, there was a little line that basically said that our supplier could, as of January 1st, 1985, they could go to the market price as of that date and charge us that price. Well, our guy from Energy said that's going to be about $2.80 per 1,000 cubic feet. We were paying 22 cents per 1,000 cubic feet and burning 100 million cubic feet every single day. The math worked out to about $312 million to us in 1983-84 bucks. And the coalition that I started, the aggregate stakes were $3.2 billion. The total net profit for Texaco for that year was $14 billion. So that would have been a ginormous windfall profit for them, which would have been good for them, obviously, but it very likely would have shut our Lake Charles facility. So the other factor is that they had hired the personal attorney to Russell Long, who was the chairman of the Senate, I'm sorry, not the chairman, the top-ranking minority member of the Senate Finance Committee. That's the gang that writes your taxes and mine. So Senator Long is a force, or was. We needed to fight fire with fire. There was a lobbying law firm in Washington. It's still there, still the best-known one, named Patton, Boggs, and Blow, the key guy being a fellow named Tommy Boggs. We retained Boggs and worked with him every step of the way, and it was, as the Wall Street Journal reported later, it was a Boggs versus John Camp fight, John Camp being the guy they were using. It did take, as you say, 14 months. There were ins and outs and ups and downs. And in addition to talking about lobbying, the book gives the reader a fairly easy-to-follow step-by-step tutorial on how our laws are, in fact, made. So it's a two-part, but not a two-part, it's a two-aim book, actually, one on describing lobbying at that level and one on describing legislating also.
All right, we're talking to Ed Jaffe, author of the book Dodging the Bullet, an Inside Washington Look at High-Stakes Lobbying Against an Oil Giant. In this case, it was Texaco. And let me ask you just an overarching question, if I can, Ed, because
sure.
In this particular case, you won. You saved the 2,200 jobs in Louisiana for the plant for PPG. You probably saved consumers millions of dollars as a result of that. And it was a win-win for everybody. However, in general, this was all because of deregulation in the oil and gas industry. Isn't deregulation a good thing for consumers? You know, why would you want to fight it, even if you do save jobs in the short time? And I'm going to give you an example of Chrysler. You know, we've spent a lot of money saving Chrysler and General Motors as a result of lobbying on the parts of numerous people in order to save jobs in Detroit, at least temporarily. Was that the right thing to do for the economy and for the country, however? After all, this is the second time we've saved Chrysler.
Well, that's an excellent question, Billy. And to answer your first part of the question, deregulation has definitely a mixed record. Some of it's worked well, some of it not so well. The airline industry, a lot of us who fly or who flew, might say, no, that's really ruined it. The telecommunications industry, about which you know infinitely more than I do, I guess it's worked well, right? For the automotive industry, again, I think it's worked well, but there are some where it's worked and there are some cases where no. So that depends on the specifics.
All right. Ed, now you're the author of the book Dodging the Bullet. What do you want readers to take away from reading Dodging the Bullet?
Okay. Excuse me for a minute. I'm sorry. Swallowed wrong. Dodging the Bullet, what I'd like them to take away is an understanding of the way the laws are made, an understanding that lobbying, at that level at least, is a heck of a lot more complex than they think. There were probably 150 people with whom we met over that 14 months, and we met time after time with, and the staffers. For those who are willing to work with staffers, and in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties, I would say if you're talking about Washington, you need to go to the field office of the members of Congress and get to know them. A good staffer has that member's ear. make your case with the staffer. That's key. And then don't give up trying to make your case across the board at all levels, whether it's local, state, national. Since I've retired, I have done that probably 5 or 6 times every week, because there are always issues on that are of real interest to us.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking to Ed Jaffe, author of the book, Dodging the Bullet, an Inside Washington Look at High-Stakes Lobbying Against an Oil Giant. Ed, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Okay, I've got a wonderful website with an awful long name. It's lobbyingagainstanoilgiant.com. That will tell you everything you need to know about the book. It's probably the cheapest way to get the book, which is also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available in Kindle. It's available in Nook. It's available in a book form, which I frankly like. And I may be available on Borders if Borders still exists.
All right. Ed, thank you so much for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Billy, thanks very much.
Thank you.